Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and looking forward to our conversation today as we visit with an author and who is really a leading voice in the international missional church movement. We'll find out maybe what that means, if that's a term that you're not familiar with, but he's a frequent speaker at international conferences, an expert in church planting, and co-founded the Forge Mission Training Network with Alan Hirsch. My guest today is Michael Frost. He's the vice principal of Morling College and the founding director of the Tinsley Institute. It's a mission study center located at Morling College in Sydney, Australia, where we're talking to Michael today. It's morning there, and we're honored to spend a little time with him. He's written several books, including The Big Ideas, The Road to Missional, and Incarnate, The Body of Christ in an Age of Disengagement. He's also founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea, and we're going to talk about a new wonderful little book, by the way, which we have three copies of, called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. And this is a book I know you're going to want to pick up, because you'll find it very helpful and an easy read, and but full of important insight. And so, Michael Frost, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
I'm interested in this wonderful little book, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People, is the subtitle. It's called Surprise the World. And you have a passion for Christianity as surprising. And I want you maybe just say a little about that. In fact, maybe just to set it up, you invite Christians to live questionable lives, but you're not talking about bad ethics or morals, are you?
No, I'm not. I think that for the most part, a lot of church leaders and those who are wanting to encourage evangelism have tended to take the line that the Bible tells us that all of us are evangelists, that we should all go out and find opportunities to share the gospel with others. And there's been lots of training to that effect and all sorts of encouragement for us all to do that. But my understanding as I read the New Testament is that it's not quite as simple as that. I think really when I read Peter and Paul in the New Testament, there seems to be like a two-tiered approach to this. There are evangelists who are meant to go and do that, to proclaim the gospel boldly. But it seems to me that what Peter and Paul both expect the average Christian, if I can put it that way, those who don't sense that they're gifted as evangelists, our primary work in the area of evangelism isn't so much about bold proclamation and putting our foot in the door and starting conversations and directing, turning the conversation to Jesus and those sorts of things. By and large, it seems, both of them think that mostly what we should do when we're talking about Jesus is to answer people's questions. Both of them say that. I mean, Peter more explicitly, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's in you. The idea is that our lives should be so surprising, so intriguing, so questionable, as you mentioned before, that people are going to ask us why we live the way we live or do what we do or behave the way we behave. And it's in that context that we then get to speak about Christ. So I'm not saying the so-called average Christian shouldn't be talking about Jesus. I think we should. But I just think that the medium through which we do that is in response to the questions of others. So in the book I say, if no one's asking you about your faith or about the reason why you live the way you live, maybe you're not quite doing it right.
And leading a questionable life, I just thought that I'm going to hang on to that idea for a long time. But Michael, before we go on, I know when you were talking about that, you even suggested that we should act almost like a movie trailer for a movie. Just say more about that illustration.
Yeah, well, whenever you go to the theater, to watch a film, there's always trailers for upcoming features that will soon be shown. And Some people don't like trailers. I happen to really enjoy the trailers, so I like to get there in time to watch them. My wife doesn't, but that's another story. The thing about a trailer is it's basically like the best bits of an upcoming film. So if it's a comedy, all the funny lines are in a trailer. Sometimes we go and see those movies and we discover that only the funny lines are in the trailer, but that, again, that's another story too. But the biggest explosions, the funniest lines, the most breathtaking stunts, whatever it might be, they load that into the trailer so that when you watch this, you know, 3-minute trailer, the point is you're meant to, if it's a good trailer and if it's for a good film, you know, you'll elbow your friend or your spouse or your partner and you'll say, hey, you know, let's go see that. And what I'm saying is that we ought to live lives that are like the trailer. So if we imagine that the reign of God, the kingdom of God, is coming, and it will come in its fullness and its beauty, with all its justice and reconciliation and peace and mercy and wholeness, that, if you like, is the upcoming blockbuster. Our job is to be like trailers to that. People are meant to see our lives and see just a taste, just an inkling, just, if you like, some of the best bits of what the world to come will be like. And so, and my point, to go back to the earlier question, is that when we live that way, when we live as people who are living, as it were, into the future, we're living just reconciled, merciful, kind, good, whole, beautiful lives now, that's meant to be questionable. That's meant to be kind of like, what? Why are you living like that? And indeed, the point that I make in the book, Surprise the World, is that that's how the early church took over the Roman Empire. We didn't take up arms. We didn't rise up against our Roman oppressors. We didn't conquer, like, local governments and then lead some kind of insurrection against Rome. We changed the whole empire by living questionable lives. We fed the poor. We ran hospices. We cared for the sick and dying. We did extraordinary and yet ordinary but questionable things that completely corroded the evil Roman Empire from the inside out. And I'm suggesting, well, maybe we could learn from that.
Mm. You're an international speaker on issues of missional church, and I'm wondering if, as you said, the phrase, I think, living into the future, is that what you mean by missional? Or maybe define that term, because maybe people aren't familiar with it, or it maybe gets misused or misunderstood.
Yeah, good point. It is a bit of an esoteric term, and it's not actually even a biblical term. So it comes from a Latin term, not a Greek one. So you can't go to the Bible and find out what it says all about being missional. But the word, the Latin word from which it comes, missio, it's the word we get, mission, or we also get emission. It's the idea of being propelled, pushed out, a kind of outward orientation. And people for a long time now have tended to use the term mission to describe missionaries going overseas, as it were, being propelled, sent out to another land to share the gospel. But in more recent years, people have been saying, yeah, but shouldn't that define all Christian people, not just those who are going to, you know, South America or to Africa or somewhere like that? And I would agree. It's like, yes, to be a sent one, to be impelled outwardly toward into the lives of others, ought to be just a primary fundamental stance that all Christians should take. And so we use this kind of invented word, missional, which is to say everything that the church is and does, collectively but also individually, ought to have some dimension to which there is an outward orientation. And the simplest definition of mission I've ever heard was by a South African missiologist called David Bosch, and he defined it this way. The mission of God's people is to alert everyone everywhere to the universal reign of God. So to alert everyone everywhere to the universal reign of God. So behind that definition is the assumption that God reigns, that his kingdom has come. It is just, it is about reconciliation, it is about beauty and wholeness and peace. It has come, and yet it is still yet to come in its fullness. And so the mission of God's people is to alert others to that reign, to what the reign of King Jesus looks like. And that takes us back to the trailer thing we were talking about before. If the reign of King Jesus looks like, as I've described it, justice, beauty, reconciliation, peace, mercy, kindness, joy, redeemed pleasure, if that's what it looks like, then our job is to create foretastes of that now, to alert people to what the reign of King Jesus looks like, which then tells them that Jesus is the King, he is the Lord, he is the Savior. If we come under his reign, if we accept his kingship, we live into the future now. That's what it means to be missional. It's more than evangelism. It includes evangelism because it includes telling people about the reign of God, telling people about the lordship of Jesus. But it also includes living it, demonstrating it, working for justice, working for peace, practicing hospitality and generosity, all the things that we believe the age to come is going to be like. We're trying to practice them in the here and now.
We'll talk more about some practical ways that we can practice that living, that kingdom living, here and now with Michael Frost. Michael, he is the vice principal of Moreland College, the founding director of the Tinsley Institute. It's a mission study center located at Moreland College in Sydney, Australia. He's written several books. The one we're referencing today is a new little book called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. We've got three copies to give away. We'll do that by email today. If you drop us a note, go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can send us an email with your contact information. We'll put you in for the drawing for this great little resource. And we're going to talk about a little five-habit model of highly missional people coming up in the moments ahead. So stay tuned to Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and Michael Frost, my guest today, as we talk about his new book, Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. Michael's a leading voice in the international missional church movement and a frequent speaker at international conferences, written several books, more than a dozen, actually, and he's the founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea, lives in Sydney, Australia, and we're talking about something called the Bells Model, which, as I understand, Michael, is kind of something you've developed over the years, and one of your good friends, Alan Hirsch, kept referring to it, and so you finally had to sort of explain it in a book.
Right. Yeah, it was just something that our church came up with, really. We weren't trying to invent something that, you know, anyone else would necessarily use. We were just trying to explore what it would look like in practical terms for everyday people to live out being missional. I was just explaining to you before what being missional is, alerting others to the reign of God. And when you talk that way, I mean, I think a lot of people think, okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I get that. But in real, practical, everyday terms, what am I going to do tomorrow about that? And by and large, I think for the most part, the church has pretty much said to people, well, you should witness to your friends and neighbors and colleagues, and you should invite them to come along to a church meeting or a worship service or something like that. And we're suggesting, well, that's a bit of a reduction of what the mission of God is. Certainly there's no problem with inviting people to church, and it's great that you should witness to people about your love of Jesus, but isn't the reign of God about more than that? And so we started to develop a number of values. And what does the reign of God look like in terms of what are its values? And we came up with things like hospitality and generosity and being spirit-filled and being Christ-like. And as we said before, that being sent people, seeing ourselves as primarily oriented outward into the lives of others. And we wrote all of that down, and everyone thought that sounded great too. And I guess we could have turned that into like a vision statement or a mission statement and embossed it on a plaque and hung it on a wall somewhere. But really, it wouldn't have changed anything terribly much. So we took one more step and we said, well, hold on. If we believe these things and we live them, what actually in real terms would we do about them? And that led us down thinking about how habits really reinforce and help shape our thinking. And so we came up with these five habits. We're just saying if you can foster these habits in your life, they will actually create a generous, hospitable, spirit-filled, Christ-like, sent form of life. They'll bind you to each other as fellow believers. They'll connect you more deeply to God, but they'll also propel you outward into the lives of others. And we came up with these five things. Bells, as you mentioned before, just is an acrostic. It's bless, eat, listen, learn, and S is sent. we started living them out. Alan Hirsch heard about them. He started speaking about them all over the place. People would ask him, oh, when you talk about being missional, well, what does that look like? And he'd say, oh, my friend Mike, his church does this, that, and the other thing. And so it was like, oh, well, everyone's talking about it. We might as well write it out. So it's kind of been turned into this book. I'm not selling little Bells figurines. I don't have a Bells t-shirt. It's not like I'm trying to create an industry here. It's just some habits that a community in Sydney lives out. And it turns out lots of people around the world have found them very useful as well.
We'll unpack them as we go along here a little bit. Just to review, bless, eat, listen, learn, and then scent. The acronym BELLS. But before we kind of break them down a little bit, you suggest that we need to develop these as mindful habits. Say more about that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, it seems to me as though, particularly in the Enlightenment kind of thinking, evangelical kind of world has tended to think that if you get your thinking right, if we get your doctrine and your belief right, then you'll act right. Yeah. So it basically, to use the kind of technical terms, if we can instill orthodoxy in you, and that just means right thinking, it will lead to orthopraxy, that is right behavior. And that's not wrong, but it also works back the other way, Neil. It can also be the case that if you learn right living, orthopraxy, it does actually shape the way you think, and it leads to orthodoxy. And I would want to suggest to you that most of your listeners, those of your listeners who were raised in the church by Christian families, that's probably how their faith was formed. They learned how to live as a believer in the life of their family as well as engaged in the life of their church from childhood all the way up. They learned habits of life, and those habits reinforce and help shape their belief system. I don't see why it can't be the case that we should think more seriously about that. How does our habitual behavior shape what we believe? And so I'm not saying that you should abandon orthodoxy or you shouldn't teach the truth or anything like that. I believe all of that. But I'm just saying for a lot of people, and I don't want to be too gender stereotypical here, but certainly in my experience, lots of men actually find it far easier if they – I'll often hear them say – just tell me what to do. Like, just tell me what do I have to do or perform or be in order to embrace this. I mean, the ideas are good, but give me some practical way to live that out. And so the habits are basically ways of saying here is habitual behaviors that we believe will engender and reinforce biblical or missional values in your life. And I'm convinced that they can just as easily help disciple and shape people as much as Bible studies can.
And we can often, it's easy to maybe get into bad habits, and at the same time, it's not always so easy to generate new habits. So do you have any, we're still fairly early in the new year that we just, we'll take the next 21 days and we'll turn our life around?
Yeah, well, in the book I refer to a number of kind of books and some research that talks about how long it takes to change habits. And, there are certain suggestions. It's a certain number of days and the like. Others are saying, well, it's actually months and months for deep-seated habits to be adopted. And so in the book, again, one of the things that I mention is, I don't want you to be just left to your own devices. Like, okay, Neil, single person by himself says, okay, I'm going to live out these habits, and who knows how long that will last. But if you were to put yourself into an accountability relationship with some people in your fellowship, would it be possible that together you could inspire each other on, disciple each other, and nurture each other into living out these habits? So in the book, I mention all five habits. I explain what's involved in each one. I talk about why each one is helpful and useful. And then at the very end of the book, I talk about how we developed a thing called DNAs, Discipleship Nurture Accountability Groups. Maybe some of your listeners will be familiar with accountability groups. Often they're around holding each other accountable not to sin in various areas of their lives. The accountability groups I'm suggesting are the ones where you're holding yourself to the habit. So you meet with several people. I meet with a number of friends every Friday for breakfast, and we ask each other, who did you bless this week? And what questions, issues, or learning came out of that for you? Who did you eat with this week? What questions, issues, or learning came out of that for you? So we hold each other accountable for a start, but we also get to raise questions like, oh, well, I ate with the Joneses. They told me all about how their marriage is in great strain and difficulty. I was hopeless. I didn't know what to say. I felt like a real idiot. Well, in that accountability structure, then your friends would say to you, okay, well, do you need to read some stuff on how to respond to a question like that? Or what kind of stuff do you need to do in order to be better at pastorally caring for people going through that kind of a situation in their lives? So it's not just about like checking a box, did you do your homework this week? It's also about how are you being shaped and how are you becoming more Christ-like as a result of you living these kinds of habits out in your world.
Well, let's jump in. We got a few minutes before a break, so let's talk about the first one. We're talking Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People, written by Michael Frost. The first one, bless. Just say, what does it mean to bless someone?
Yeah, well, the old-fashioned English word from which we get it, it has the connotation of to add strength to one's arm. So if I bless someone, I'm adding strength to their arm. And so we say, well, you know, anything that builds somebody up, encourages them, strengthens them in some way, is to bless them. And so we've boiled it down to a few things. Words of affirmation, obviously, are going to add strength to someone. A gift, a material gift, to give someone something, give them money, give them a gift of some kind, something they need, something that they want, or an act of kindness. You know, babysit their kids so that they can go out for dinner, or cut their lawn, or, you know, lend them a car, or whatever the case may be. So words of affirmation, giving them a gift or some kind of act of kindness or time spent with them in some way. These are the kinds of things that expand another person, that bring life to them. And so in our habitual lifestyle, we say you will bless three people every week, one of whom is a member of your church, one of whom is not a Christian, and then the third one can be from either category. And the reason we say that is because we want Christians to be blessing each other. That helps to bind the church together. We want Christians to be saying words of affirmation, giving gifts, and spending time with each other and performing acts of kindness. So that's binding the community together. But at least one of those three each week should be a non-Christian, which then propels you outward into other people's lives and helps to expand relationship and connection with them. When you buy a gift for someone, when you speak words of affirmation into their life, when you do an act of kindness for them, it ricochets back. People are touched by it. They want to respond in some way. It's only simply to say thank you. But very often, lots of people feel like, oh, maybe I should respond in kind, or that was a lovely thing that Neil did for me. I'll respond in kind in some way. And so it starts, this blessing thing starts to ricochet around the church, and it ricochets beyond and outward into the neighborhood. So basically, every Monday morning, I'm just going to ask you to get up and get on your knees and ask the Holy Spirit to reveal three names to you of three people that you should bless that week.
Talking with Michael Frost today. Michael is author of the new book called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. We've got three copies to give away. We'll do it via email. You connect with us at myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page and send us your contact information. We'll put you in the drawing for one of these great little books. More with Michael Frost in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Staben. We've connected today with Michael Frost, who's a leading voice in the international missional church movement. He's authored more than a dozen books. He's vice principal of Moreland College. He's founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea. We're talking to him from Sydney, Australia, about his new book called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. And it uses the acrostic or the acronym BELLS for Bless, Eat, Listen, Learn, and Sent. So we want to find out more about that second habit of eating. It seems like hospitality is pretty central to all of the scriptures, and maybe we need to kind of recapture that as followers of Christ.
Well, I mean, I think by and large Americans, and particularly American Christians, are very hospitable. So there's no question about bringing people to their table. But my concern is that very often Christians find themselves only ever bringing other Christians to their table. And their friendship circle tends to have been members of their own church, for example. And so I want to encourage that. I think that sitting together around a table is a fundamentally Christian practice. I mean, the only act of worship Jesus really told us to perform, it was not singing, it wasn't listening to sermons, it wasn't Bible study. I'm not suggesting that he doesn't want us to do those things, but he didn't tell us to do those things. What he did tell us to do was to eat and drink in his name. And so the love feast was central to the Christian experience from the very beginning. And I think American Christians, by and large, have got that down. We're good at bringing people to our table. My only concern is when that just becomes for only other Christians. And in larger churches, often it's only our own little circle of friends within the church. So what I'm suggesting is that we broaden that. So we say you're going to eat with three people every week, at least one person who's a member of your church, at least one person who's not a Christian, third person can be from either category. And I often have people say, well, eating with three people every week, that's a lot. But you already eat three times a day. I mean, that's 21 meals a week. All I'm asking you to do is just to bring three people to the table. You could cheat and just bring all three to the one meal if you want, get it all over and done with. Or you can have three different meals. And I don't mean like a big dinner party at your home. I just mean like grab coffee and a donut with somebody, grab a lunch with someone. Just sit across a table with food and drink between you. And you know what happens, Neil, when you sit at a table with food, fellowship begins. People speak. Conversation happens. I often say to my students here in Australia that I think that the table is the great equalizer in human relationships. And I always illustrate it by saying to my students, if I was to invite you to my home for a meal, how would you feel? And usually they often begin by saying, oh, I'd be honored, I'd be thrilled, I'd be delighted. But when they get honest, they say, I'd be scared, I'd be intimidated, I'd be kind of nervous. It's like, right, because I'm your professor, I'm old enough to be your dad, it doesn't feel like a very neutral relationship. You would feel intimidated. I get that. But how many times have you ever been to a meal at your boss's home or your professor's home or someone that you kind of see as being in some way above you, and you sit around a table and you share life and you make dumb jokes and you get contradicted by your spouse or you spill the water on the table or whatever the case may be, and then you realize, huh, they're just like me. I mean, people are people. And I would say definitely in terms of mission, being sent into the lives of others, very often non-Christians think, either they think I'm not good enough to be in the church, I'm not holy enough to be in the church or to be with church people, or alternatively they think our church people think they're better than me or they're more judgmental than me. Now, you sit around a table and you watch how those kinds of stereotypes and caricatures start to break down. One thing my wife often says is this: it's almost impossible to hate somebody whose story you've truly heard. And I think it's right. It's easy to say, oh, you Christians are all judgmental, or you're all bigots, or you're all homophobes, or you're all this, you're all deluded, you're all whatever, 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 whatever. And it's easy for Christians to say, oh, all you non-Christians are sinful or depraved or blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, when you sit at a table and you actually hear a person's story, you discover that it's impossible to caricature them. It's impossible to dismiss them or hate them. Understanding breeds openness. I'm not saying everyone suddenly becomes a Christian because of that, but they are open to at least respecting and understanding your faith when they sit across the table from you. So bless three people every week. Eat with three people every week. I'm not asking you to add anything into your schedule. I'm not asking you to do it every Wednesday night from 7 till 9. I'm simply saying, in whichever way it fits in with your current rhythms of life, bring someone to your table, or bring three people to your table, and find three people that you can bless. So I would say, if we just stopped at those two, if your church started expecting everyone to bless three people every week with words of affirmation, gifts, and kindness, and eat with three people every week, man, that would just start to bounce all around the church. It would bind you to each other. It would connect you with people maybe you haven't even talked to in your own church. But it also ricochets out into the neighborhood. You start to be getting to be known as the most generous and hospitable of people in your community. Now, we could stop there, and I guarantee you that would turn your church upside down. But as I said, there are five habits, not just two. And then the third habit is to listen to the Holy Spirit. And this is one that often raises people's eyebrows because they can kind of get the practicalities of blessing and eating. But what does it mean to listen to the Spirit? And in the book, I mention a number of tools or techniques for how to do this. But the reason why we included it as a habit was because we need Christians to be led by the Spirit into the world in which they live. I want you to pray every Monday, Lord, who do you want me to bless and eat with this week? And so you need to be open to the prompting of the Spirit for him to direct you to the people who need to sit across the table from you this week or who need a word of affirmation or an act of kindness in their life this week. So the third practice is to create space in your life where you can commune with God and you can hear his promptings in your life.
We'll take a quick break and come back and talk more about these five habits of highly missional people. That's the subtitle of the new book from Michael Frost called Surprise the World. We've gone through three, bless, eat, and listen. There's a couple more. We'll get to that in just a moment with Michael Frost. He's author of more than a dozen books and co-founder of the International Forge Mission Training Network. He's vice principal of Moreland College and founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea. And we're talking to him from Sydney, Australia. We've got three copies of the book Surprise the World to give away, and we'll do that via email. You can sign up right now if you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there, and give us your contact information. We'll put you in the drawing for Surprise the World from Michael Frost. More habits with Michael coming up in just a moment. Listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected today with Michael Frost from his office in Sydney, Australia, where he is vice principal of Moreland College. He's also founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea, and he's authored more than a dozen books, including his latest called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. We've talked about several. We want to finish up bless, eat, listen. There's two more. Let's talk about learn.
Well, the L for learn just is to learn Christ. And this is an old-fashioned phrase, learn Christ. It's what the early Christians used to say. So we were talking about being discipled or learning the Bible or something along those lines. We would talk about accepting Christ or loving Christ. But they used to talk about learning Christ. And what that meant was, now that you've denied all your pagan gods, now that you've accepted there's only one God, and he's revealed himself through the incarnate one, through Christ, we want you to learn Christ. So wipe away everything you used to know, now learn Christ. And learning Christ was not only learning the story of Christ, it was also learning about the life of Christ and Christ's expectations for you now in his kingdom and his reign. And so what we say is we want you to learn Jesus. And so there's a big emphasis in these habits on reading and rereading the Gospels. Excuse me. A number of your listeners probably read the Gospels before, or they've read little sections of it here and there. But there aren't enough Christians who are just marinating their souls in the Gospel stories of Jesus. And we want you to know Jesus deeply. Not just know him in some ethereal sense, and not just know a few doctrinal statements or beliefs about him. He's king, he died on the cross for my sins, those sorts of things. So all that's true, but we want you to know much more. We want you to know more than just a couple of parables and a few miracles and the Christmas story and the Easter story. We want you to know Jesus as though he were your idol, your hero, your king, your friend, everything you desire to be, the one you aspire to follow. We want you to be completely soaked in the story of Jesus. We don't want you to just go along on sentimental little golden book stories about Jesus. We want you to know the radical, life-changing, dynamic, extraordinary, surprising, loving, gentle, wild Messiah Jesus. And so the fourth habit, the second L, is to learn Christ, which is to spend at least one significant period each week. You pick when it's best for you, where you will just read and reread the Gospels. We have a whole list of curriculum, if you like, of chapters from various books, films you can watch, you name it, just to pour yourself into learning more about the person of Christ. Now, we're not saying don't read the rest of the Bible, and we're not saying the Gospels are more important than anything else in the Bible. We want you to read the whole of the Bible. So if you're reading, you know, any daily notes or going through any lectionary style of reading, keep it up by all means. But we want you to add this extra period of time where you're soaking yourself in Christ and learning Jesus. Now, the reason we do it is this, because we want you to be a Christ-like person. We want you to be Spirit-led, as I mentioned earlier, and sent out into the world. And when you're out there, we want you to live a surprising life by being generous and hospitable. We want people to then ask you, who you are, why do you do this? Why do you live this way? Why have you bought me this gift? Why did you send me that email with that lovely affirmation? Why have you invited me to your table? Why? I want you at that point to be able to talk about King Jesus. And sadly, I hate to say this, but I think lots of Christians don't know how to do that.
Our time will get away before we can delve into the depths of all of these. But the final one, I want you to touch on that because it's sent. That's the fifth habit. But you talk about that and talk about journaling. Why is journaling a part of this final habit?
Well, I have to say this comes out of my personal spiritual walk. It was absolutely overwhelmingly transforming for me many years ago now when I came to see myself primarily as a sent one, as a missionary. So not just a Christian, not just as a minister, not just as a follower of Jesus, but as a sent one. I mean, I think it's 21 or 22 times the Gospel of John refers to Jesus or his followers as sent ones. It's absolutely inherent in Christian self-identity. And yet, for a long time, I didn't see it. I just thought I was called to follow Jesus, or I loved Jesus, or I was saved by Jesus, and all those things are true. But built into all of those truth statements is the fact that those who've been called by the sent one are sent just as he was. And so in that respect, we want you to start to identify all the ways that you have been sent in your ordinary life to mirror the work of God in this world. So, of course, if you go on a short-term mission trip to Haiti, you would feel like God sent you there. If you went and volunteered at a local kind of refuge or at a feeding program, you would feel like God sent you there to do that. But I want you to sense that God sent you to do your work as an accountant in that company over there, or to God sent you as a stay-at-home parent to raise those kids, or God sent you to be a school teacher, or sent you to be a doctor, or sent you to be a sanitation worker, whatever the case may be. We want you to identify your work, your engagement in neighborhood, your connection to the community broadly as being sent by God, gifted by God to the people with whom you're working or among whom you're living. And one of the ways we think that you can start to reshape the way you identify yourself is to journal each day all the ways that you saw yourself being sent by God that day to glorify him. So I treated my patients with real great kindness and care, even though they were being quite abusive to me. I feel like God sent me to do that. I was patient with my child, even though she was throwing a tantrum in the supermarket. I sought to respond with grace. I feel like God sent me to do that. I was obviously in the living out of the other habit. I feel like God sent me to eat lunch with this person, or God sent me to perform my work well in that particular way. So it's not just sent to share the gospel or sent to do an act of kindness. It's about all the ways in which we think our lives are increasingly mirroring the work of God. I explain it in more detail in the book, but it's the point of journaling is for us to help to get into the mindset of primarily seeing ourselves as sent ones. Now, can I just quickly say that we've been through the five habits, bless, eat, listen, learn, and be sent. Now, if you think about each of those, if you blessed three people every week, you'd become an increasingly generous person, wouldn't you? Yeah. Because your lifestyle would be oriented to giving to others. If you ate with three people every week, you'd become increasingly hospitable because you're looking to bring people together around tables. If you are listening to the Spirit every week, you're going to become increasingly Spirit-filled, Spirit-led. If you're learning Christ, our hope is that you're becoming increasingly Christ-like. And if you see yourself as a sent one, then you're going to become more and more a missional person. So the point of the habits isn't just to live them out in and of themselves, but in order that by living them out, you'll become an increasingly generous, hospitable, Spirit-led, Christ-like missionary. And that's the key. The values are unleashed through the habitual lifestyle that you embrace.
Is there one of these habits that maybe we tend to think we can overlook or not fully attend to, or maybe that we already know how to do this?
I think it really depends on our personalities. I think that there are some people who just are very contemplative and introverted and very spiritual. So for them, listening to the Spirit, oh, that's easy. I do that all the time. I'm happy to embrace that. But I don't really like eating with other people. I'm a bit of an introvert. I'm a bit shy. So for them, the eating one's going to be tough, but listening to the Spirit's going to be easy. And then there are lots of people for whom that will be the reverse. Oh, eating with people, I do that already. That's easy. But listening to the Spirit, oh, I'm not much of a reader. Reading the Gospels. There will be different habits that are difficult for different people, to be honest. But what we're suggesting about embracing them all is that they have a function that is beyond just their immediate outcome. As I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, what they do is they bind us to each other as Christians, because we're eating and blessing each other. We're sharing about what we've learned about Jesus and what the Spirit's led us to do. But they also propel us outwards, because we're eating and blessing with unbelievers. But the other thing they do is they connect us more deeply with God, because we're relying on God to speak to us through that time we're listening to the Spirit, and we're learning more and more about Christ and journaling the ways God is using us in the world. So a guy called Mike Breen often talks about this as the in, up, and out of the Christian lifestyle. The in, the stuff that binds us together. The out, the missional stuff that propels us into the lives of unbelievers, and the up, which connects us more deeply with God. Well, all five of these, if lived together, actually have that in, up, and out kind of dimensions as well.
We're talking about Surprise the World. It's a new book from Michael Frost, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People, and we've been reviewing them. They use the acronym BLESS. And it stands for, the acronym BELLS stands for Bless, Eat, Listen, Learn, and Sent. Michael, your book previous to this was called Incarnate, The Body of Christ in an Age of Disengagement. And I'm just thinking that, as you talk about even the in, up, and out, I mean, we tend to maybe kind of be detached, or certainly our world doesn't really get to see very often the incarnational a presentation of the gospel. So just say a word about that, maybe that so we don't live like tourists in this world.
Yeah, well, that's what that book was about, Incarnate, which was about the fact that, we become increasingly people who live in our heads and people who live online. And I'm not putting down new technologies. I think they're great. I mean, I live in Australia, and I feel very connected to all sorts of people in America, thanks to the internet and things like that. So I'm not anti-technology, but my fear is that for lots of Christians, they find themselves increasingly living in their heads. Thanks to the Enlightenment, you know, René Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am." In other words, my identity is chiefly in my thinking process. And then you add the internet to that, well, my thinking process then ultimately becomes this kind of global connectedness. Well, as I said, I'm not opposed to new technologies, but I do believe that the primary way we understand God is as the incarnate one. He became flesh and dwelt among us. So how can the millions of people who follow the incarnate one see their faith being lived in increasingly non-incarnational ways, in defleshed or disengaged ways? So in that book, I raise concerns about the degree to which we're just listening to podcasted sermons. We're not actually studying the Bible together. We're increasingly doing mission online by advocacy programs and by donations online to different programs, rather than actually physically going among the poor and among the lost. Again, I'm not suggesting advocacy is bad, nor that podcasting your pastor's sermons is bad. I'm simply saying if we find ourselves living more and more excarnately, that is, in a non-fleshed kind of way, it's going to do unhelpful things to our witness in this world. So use the internet, use Facebook, use Twitter, put pictures up on Instagram, engage in all of that if you like, but please balance your life in a way so that you are actually rubbing shoulders with other people, you are serving the poor, you are living in an enfleshed, physical, incarnate kind of way in the world in which God has placed you. And so in that book, I raise all sorts of concerns about that increasingly excarnate. That word's just the opposite of incarnate, this defleshed, kind of hyper-intellectual, disconnected world in which we live. And I think Christians ought to be the tonic, the alternative, the opposite of that, showing people what really deeply rooted, connected, relational, physically connected and loving lives look like.
Well, if you want to be deeply rooted and connected and loving others, loving life, you'll find Surprise the World a helpful resource. The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. Those five habits bless three people this week, at least one of whom is not a member of your church. Eat with three people this week, at least one of whom is not a member of your church. Spend at least one period of the week listening for the Spirit's voice. Spend at least one period of the week learning Christ. And journal throughout the week all the ways you alerted others to the universal reign of God through Christ. That's a little summary of Surprise the World. Bells, bless, eat, listen, learn, scent. Surprise the World from Michael Frost. Michael, I know you're not selling T-shirts or anything, but if people want to find out more, maybe just to review, if they don't pick up a copy of the book, are there some online resources you could point us to?
Yes, I go to disciplemaker.org. They'll find some material there, a summary of these habits. There's also if any pastors listening, there's a sermon series there that I wrote. If they wanted to preach a number of sermons based on this material and encourage their congregations to embrace the habits, that kind of material is there as well. And other than that, yeah, the book is available at all your favorite bookstores and online sellers and the like.
Michael Frost, author of the new book called Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. He's written a dozen books, and he serves as vice principal of Moreland College and founding director of the Tinsley Institute at Moreland College. He is a leading voice in the international missional church movement and frequent speaker at international conferences, a church planter, and a founding pastor of Small Boat Big Sea, lives in Sydney, Australia, and joining us today on Connecting Faith for a fascinating discussion. Michael, thank you for the good work you're doing and for the encouragement to us today.
Well, Neil, thanks for helping me get the word out about this. I'm not just trying to sell books. I really want to encourage followers of Jesus to kind of live into this whole missional identity we have. So, man, thank you for talking to me.
If you want to find out more about Michael Frost, you can check his website, disciplemaker.org, or you can go to our show page, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And we'll have a link up there to Michael's information as well as the book Surprise the World, The Five Habits of Highly Missional People. We post our interviews on the show page after each conversation, and you may want to listen to it again, or if you missed part of it, the audio quality wasn't the best coming from Australia, but we do post those interviews so you can hear it again online on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, and you can pass it on to a friend as well. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.